Okay, so it's November 22nd, 2017. I'm Rick Hansen. And as befits the occasion, I want to explore with you thankfulness and gratitude. And I want to kind of offer two related Buddhist-y perspectives about it. And then, hopefully no one will panic at this possibility, I thought if you're interested, we'd make time for those who want to find a partner and do a little bit of back and forth conversation about some of the things you're thankful for. And if you're not interested in that, which is really perfectly okay, I know a lot of people come to a setting like this, and the last thing in the world they want to do is talk to another person. I can relate to that feeling myself, so I want to make it really okay to just sit out. It'll be about 10 minutes total. And one of the things that I'm going to invite you to consider is what you're thankful for in relationship to some things that are challenging for you, whatever those might be. So both, I'll invite you to just talk about, one person will mainly talk, one person will mainly listen, and you'll switch roles and then we'll come back. And include, if you like, some of what you're grateful for related to things you're dealing with. Like, oh, I've got this little weird problem in my low back, and I'm thankful for my care providers, body workers, modern medical technology, occasional Advil, thank you, et cetera, ice, you know. So what are you glad about? Okay, so that's that part. The two themes I want to introduce related to thankfulness is, first I want to play off of one of the really most potent and short pieces of Dharma I know, which is this collection of teachings. It's probably about 3 pages long, from the third Zen patriarch. And the opening gets translated in different ways, but it's fairly well known. It starts out, the great way, the way of practice, the way of awakening. The great way is easy for one with no preferences. That's how it starts. And then it goes on talking about when one thing is set against another, heaven and earth are divided, and suffering begins, essentially. And there are a number of other very pithy statements that have been handed down to us. I'm not sure exactly how far back, probably at least over 1,000 years ago, these teachings came to us. And among another really pithy statement that I've thought about, reflected on many times, is enlightenment is no anxiety about imperfection. Wow. You just kind of mull that one. Enlightenment is not a term used casually. Enlightenment is no anxiety about imperfection. You just think about that in terms of little subtle imperfections that we get anxious about. What is an imperfection? So anyway, so the great way is easy for one with no preferences. And it's interesting that a lot of what aids thankfulness is a quality of acceptance and not preferring something other than what we've been given. And you think about how much of Buddhist teaching in many ways is represented, actually and often symbolically, by someone standing there with an empty bowl, who's thankful for whatever is placed in the bowl. There's no preferring. There's no preferring. There's simply a thankfulness. So it's quite profound to explore what that is actually like, to be thankful without preference, without preferring. And one of the things that takes you into is the suchness of whatever it is that you're appreciating. Because in preferring, there's comparing. So when we're not comparing, we're just with what it is. The spoonful of rice, the sip of water, the chocolate fudge sundae. It doesn't mean that we need to be thankful for everything. We're not thankful for, you know, a whack in the head. We're not thankful for the person who runs the red light. But certainly what we are thankful for, we can be thankful for it, and thankfulness is aided by a kind of falling away or relaxation around preferring, which is very linked to desiring, wanting, and craving, and thus suffering. So that's an opening reflection, the relationship between not preferring and thankfulness. It gets very interesting. Again, people can get into kind of theoretical questions like, well, I prefer to feed children over not preferring feeding children. And it gets interesting and complex to explore what it's like to have sincere values. Clearly, there's a moral basis to Buddhism, and there's a clear distinction between right view and wrong view, wise view and unwise view, and preferring right speech to wrong speech and so forth. So there is a valuing. So what is the third Zen patriarch getting at in this notion of preferring? So there's a whole exploration there. But more than anything, I just kind of want to invite you into really being mindful of your own experience related to thankfulness and preferring. Okay. And noticing how not being so caught up in preferences, and it must be this way, it can't be that way, how that really opens a door to being incredibly grateful to just about everything. A kind of goofy example of that for me is for about six, so I dropped out of college when I was 19, and for 6 months, I got almost all my calories from the garbage cans of grocery stores. I got a little extra from my food stamps. I dropped out of UCLA, I taught at a free school, hippie heaven, Wilhelm Reich based, very, very intense. This was 1972, 3, I think. Free school, very independent. And so on the way home, hitchhiking back from the school to my apartment, where I slept on the floor of my friend's apartment, really, in his living room, I hit up 3 grocery stores on the way home and went around back. I'd been taught how to dumpster dive. And I just recall the delightful feeling of gratitude I had for anything that was edible. And by the way, I never got sick during those 6 months. Sprouted potatoes, flour bags that someone had inadvertently cut into, they couldn't sell them. I never ate anything that was canned. And a fair amount of produce that just was a bit gone. And there were grocery stores that threw away what the other stores sold. And those are the ones I tended to go to. But anyway, I was just happy. Oh, wow. And I actually brought some kids with me sometimes because I got to know the families. And they thought it was the coolest thing in the world, like free food, like garbage cans. They didn't care that it was a big dumpster with flies buzzing around. It was like, woohoo, free, you know, like no preferences. Anyway, that's a goofball analogy, but I do reflect on that. Okay. The second thing I want to kind of offer, set the table here, are the classic, in Buddhism, 3 jewels that we can be grateful for. And they are, first, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And there are different ways to interpret those words. Certainly, gratitude or thankfulness for the historical individual, the historical person, living around 2,500 years ago in northern India, and that person's example of practice and hard-won insights and personal integrity over a 40-year teaching career, that can give somebody confidence in their own practice. So there can be a thankfulness. Thank you. Thank you as an example of those who've worked hard and offered things that we make use of today. And another way to understand that gratitude for Buddha, speaking of Bodhi, is that universal capacity for wakefulness in everyone. That's not particular to the historical Shakyamuni, the historical Buddha. So it's like a gratitude for innate wakefulness, innate Buddha nature. Even if it's covered over, even if we're forgetful about it, even if it's kind of slippery, and as soon as you look over your shoulder and catch it, it moves around, right? As soon as you try to hold on to it, it becomes something different. But still, and yet, there is a sense of that inside us and a sense of that inside other people. So that's something to be thankful for, if you like. Second is Dharma. Dharma is translated really in 2 ways that are very related and quite important. One is just reality. What is reality? What is the truth? Just the bottom line, the facts, the essence of the matter, what's real. And the other way of interpreting the word is the accurate account of what's true, of what's real. So in that term, we have the Buddha's, in terms of the Buddha's context, we have the Buddha's description of things. But most importantly, we have his methods, his suggestions for practice, for what we can do to suffer less and love more. Cling less, love more. The four words I took away with me from a retreat I was on some years ago. Cling less, love more. So that's the Dharma. And again, we can be grateful for skillful know-how, useful instruction, very insightful distinctions that we can rely upon, take refuge in, and be grateful for. And you can, if you like, broaden from Buddha Dharma to other dharmas, including the Dharma of science, the Dharma of literature, and the truths that are expressed in fiction. But in particular, in this setting at least, gratitude for the Dharma, thankfulness. In modern times, we can take so many things for granted. I think of Ta-Nehisi Coates' definition of privilege as not having to take things into account. And these days, there's so much we don't need to take into account, including accessing wisdom. Just a click of a mouse, or you know, hit a button on a, just change the channel. Go to a library, and suddenly there's access to tremendous wisdom, teachings. In the old days, as it were, people typically would have to journey long ways to find a single teacher. And often they were with that teacher, for better or worse, for the rest of their life, because it was too arduous to find a different teacher. So these days, wow, what a gift that we have such access to wisdom in a larger Buddhist frame and in other sacred traditions and from humanity altogether. So, and then the third jewel, including as one can take refuge in and or be grateful for, classically is known as the Sangha. And that word is, the root of the word is basically a gathering of practitioners, a gathering of people on a path. And the original meaning of Sangha was relatively vertical. It was being grateful for and teaching, taking refuge in the monastic community and the lineage of a realization and wisdom and moral conduct and demonstration that was present and alive in the communities of people engaged with Buddhism, and in an unbroken lineage stretches all the way back to the Buddha himself. So that's the original notion of Sangha. The broader meaning, which has become more and more how we really understand it, is a sense of community. Like, there is Sangha in this room. Thich Nhat Hanh has an interesting line. He says the Buddha, essentially to paraphrase, the Buddha of the future, the Buddha of the 21st century, will be the Sangha. Isn't that interesting? The Buddha, the exemplar of wisdom, will be the community of practitioners itself. And the Buddha was very, very clear. While he encouraged, he named the three jewels, you know, his own example and the capacity for wakefulness inside us all, the Dharma and the community of practitioners, he did not appoint a pope. He resisted hierarchy. And for him, it was really the community altogether, with respect for experience and respect for attainment and realization and moral demonstration, but it was the community altogether that was the authority, not a particular person. And so there's an invitation there to finish for all of us to be grateful for our friends, our wise companions. There's a lot of Dharma, there's a lot of teaching about appreciating good fellowship, gathering in community. I think in our very fragmented and fragmenting times, amidst many things that are wonderful, there's a very powerful dispersive, deconstructive dynamic at work in the world at large. There's some good things that come with that, ferment and creativity and diversity of different kinds, but it also tends to just blow networks apart and lead to a lot of loneliness and disconnection and lack of resource and just sort of lack of humility as well that comes when you're rubbing shoulders with lots of different people every day. And so to be able to appreciate a gathering like this, larger gatherings of people who are committed to the path, people with good heart altogether, it's a really good thing. One of the things, just to truly finish, I think of is, I don't know if you've ever tried Insight Timer. It's an interesting app. It's free. You can do it on your phone. And anytime you click in and you maybe start meditating, you can see how many people who use that app, many millions of people use that app worldwide who are meditating with you right then. It's pretty neat. They don't list the names and email addresses, and don't worry, no privacy, but just the fact, and you'll see distributed around the world, like right now, the community of fellow practitioners around the world, at least doing what they might call meditation through related insight time. Anyway, so that's kind of a context here, and I wanted to offer that as some Buddhist-y reflections on thankfulness. And if you're up for it, I think we have time. I think this opportunity to actually talk with a person, speaking of community, could be really a nice thing to do. So it's really okay to sit it out. In a moment, I'll ask you to pick a partner and pick an A and a B. A's will go first. One person mainly talks, one person mainly listens. And the what to talk about is whatever's useful for you, including maybe a reflection about what I've just said. Or, in particular, you could talk about some of the things you're thankful for and grateful for these days, and maybe even look at something that's upsetting you or worrying you or is hard for you or painful or you're dealing with through the lens of, oh, what resources could I be thankful for and grateful for real, that are helping me or could help me deal with this? And then we'll come back, and I'll give you time signals. I'll tell you when to switch. Sound okay? Try it. No imposition. So find a partner if you're up for it, and then spread out. I encourage you to really spread out so you can hear yourself think. If you go out into the foyer, be back in 10 minutes by 20 after. If you want a partner and don't have one, raise your hand and look for a hand. Any hands up that would like a hand? Okay. Spread out. Tune into your partner. Pick an A and a B. Okay. You know the instruction. Just what are you thankful for? Have fun with this. Oh, sorry. Listen. Ding, ding, ding. Bees. 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 Ready? Bees. You get to enjoy. Shh. Bees, you get to enjoy what in Buddhism is considered one of the four heavenly abodes, divine abodes, which is gladness for the other person. So your practice as a bee is to listen to your partner and from time to time find a gladness for them that they have those things to be thankful for. You got it? The word for that in Pali is mudita, altruistic joy, sympathetic joy, happiness for the happiness of others. You got it? That's what you're doing, bees, as well as listening empathically and attentively. Okay, ready? A's begin.
Da, 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 da.